talk about Joseph today. So much to talk about with Joseph. I'm going to begin in Genesis 37. Genesis 37. Really, chapter 37 through the rest of Genesis is devoted to the events that occur from Joseph on. Really to show the preservation of God's people, the heritage, how they came to be, how did they go into Egypt, how did all that work out. But there's so many lessons we can learn from Joseph. Let's begin with a word of prayer.
Our Father, we want to thank you for the day that we've had so far, the time we've had together. Bless them with being with our brothers and with godly men who are striving to be more pleasing to you. Thank you for the wisdom that's present in your word and the wisdom that's been lived out in the lives of these men. Thank you for those who made it possible for a week like this, those who sacrificed their time and their resources and their energy. Father, may each one of us give this week our all to get out of it and to give into it all that would be pleasing to you. Please use this week to work on us and to change us, to make us more fit for the work of your kingdom. Help us to be working on ourselves now and to be looking for the examples of these young men of faith who faced so many of the same things that we will face afterwards. Father, help us to learn from their good examples and their bad, and ultimately help us to see through them Jesus more clearly. Help us to be more like him. In Jesus' name we pray.
God uses a young man by the name of Joseph to preserve God's people, later make them into a great nation. God had promised Abraham to give him the land, and not only that, to bring in his son into the world to save all mankind. And a lot of that occurs in the events leading back to Joseph. So can a young man be useful in God's will? Absolutely. So Joseph is hated. He's 17 years old in verse 2. I would say that's young. So, why is he hated? Give me some of the reasons.
Because his dad likes him more over all the other brothers.
He's loved more. Why is he loved more?
Because he's the son of Rachel.
He's the son of Rachel, which he worked for. Yes. So, but not only that, it says that he was the son of his old age in verse 3. So, he loved him more. So why else did they hate him? Did the brothers hate
him? He shared these prophecies about how God would elevate him above his brothers.
Yeah, there's two dreams. What were the dreams?
The brothers would bow down to him. They would all bow down to him.
Yeah, both of them were basically saying that. There was the one dream about their sheaves bowed down to his sheaf. And then there's the dream of the sun and moon and stars bowing down to him. Which means what? That they would all bow down to him. Even the father rebuked him for this dream. You say you're going to bow down before you. But it does say he observed the saying. So he kept it in mind. But now, the brothers hated this. Is that Joseph's fault that he had the dreams? Is it his fault that he told them? Either way, they hate him. It doesn't deserve the treatment that he received. Can we at least agree on that? There's something else. Why else did they hate him in verse 2? Yeah, he gave I don't know what that bad report was. I mean, were they doing something wrong that the father didn't want them to do? Were they mishandling the sheep or something? I don't know. It doesn't tell us what that was, but he told the bad report. So that all of these things added to it. There's another reason. Why else did they hate him? Because of the father's favoritism.
He got a nice coat.
Ah, How would you feel? Your siblings got something really, really nice, and you didn't.
Where's mine?
Do what?
Where's mine?
Yeah. And so they hated him. But hated him to the point of what?
Trying to kill him.
The father sends him to go check on the brothers have gone away, and so he sends the Joseph to go check on them to see how they're doing. And when they see him a long way off, they are ready to get rid of him. Now, how much do you have to hate somebody to want to get rid of them? And yet he's their brother. So then they sell him for 20 pieces of silver. Do you see any foreshadowing here of anybody? Anybody you know that was hated for envy? Anybody you know who was hated with, even without a cause? Hated and betrayed by his own, and sold for money. Not 20 pieces of silver, but 30. That's Jesus. A favored son who went before us to preserve life and suffered and for our benefit. So you see some foreshadowings here. That's pretty amazing stuff there. However, with all of this, and then he gets sold into Egypt. I don't know. If these events happened to you, how would you respond? If you're mistreated, if you're hated, if you're spoken against, if you're, you know, whatever happens to you, how do you tend to respond to these things?
Self-righteous, like I don't deserve this.
Is it tempting to retaliate, to do similar? And yet, Joseph isn't able to retaliate because he's sold, he's a slave. But yet, does Joseph, is he the kind of guy that he just buries his head in the sand and he's not doing anything now and he's just kind of given up? Is that the picture you get? What is he doing after being sold in slavery? Go to chapter 39 then. The reason why I'm skipping chapter 38 is because there's like that one chapter that gets inserted in there about Judah, how Tamar poses as a harlot and gets him pregnant. And then that's inserted into the lineage of God's people as well. But that, I believe that's why that's there. It seems like that's just inserted there in the wrong place, but it's a part of showing. So God's people, is this story and this heritage is not a neat little cookie cutter thing of perfect people. It's full of people with all kinds of mistakes and embarrassing mistakes at that. And yet God saved them. God preserved them. And this story of Joseph is about that same thing. Okay. But Joseph's in Egypt. He is a slave, but he's the best slave he could be. And notice verse 2 of chapter 39. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. Came to pass that he had made him overseer in his house over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. So, I love the fact that it says that the Lord was with Joseph. When something bad happens to you, how do you view it? Do you view it as, why is this happening to me? Why is God doing this to me? People grapple with these kinds of things. And then if you do what is right, do you sometimes still get seemingly punished? Do bad things still happen to good people? And if you view life as that way, as long as things are going well, then God must be blessing me, and then things don't go well, that he must be punishing me. This story shows you that it's not exactly like that. If you've ever wondered why do the righteous suffer, this story really helps. If you can get this point that while he is suffering, the Lord is still with him. Having the Lord with you is not a guarantee that bad things never happen to you. But having the Lord with you allows you to be able to face the bad things that do happen to you. And it may be for a much bigger purpose than even you, and to help a much larger thing that's going on here, as you see the carrying on of the story. So, he's promoted. Notice the ups and downs here. He's favored by his father, then he's sold. Now he starts doing good, and then he's promoted, and then now here comes the test. After being promoted with as high as he can be as a slave, verse 7 of chapter 39, it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master was not what is with me in the house. He hath committed all that he hath in my hand. There is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her, to lie by her, or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time, that Joseph went into the house to do his business. And there was none of the men of the house there with him. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. Now, we can learn here a little bit about temptation. What is a person who has the Lord's presence with him? How does he face temptation? And how might this help you as a young man who will face temptation? One is, what is your view of God? And one is, what is your view of sin? Notice the two. The Lord's with Joseph. And this isn't about whether he can get away with something. This isn't about whether or not he's going to get caught. It isn't about whether he's going to be embarrassed by his family. He's away from his family. Now, sometimes somebody might say, well, I don't want to do a particular thing because then what will my family think of me? I'll be embarrassed, or I'll give a bad name. Or what does he have to preserve in that regard? But his moral compass is not built upon what others think, except for one person is the most important person in the universe, and that's God. He cares about what God thinks. Now, I believe if a young man were to say, I care about what God thinks about me, I know where my blessings come from. They come from Him. And how can I mistreat Him after all He's done for me? I don't think he's blaming God for the bad things that happened to him. I don't think that he's doing that. But he knows the one he wants to please. Might that help you if you are being pressed daily with temptations? And then, this isn't just one time. This is day by day. Sometimes, it's one thing to refuse a temptation once. But then after it's presented again and again and again and again, sometimes the devil can wear us down. But yet Joseph does what he needs to do and he gets out. Might you learn something from temptation here? What did Jesus mean when he said, if your right hand offends you, cut it off? If your right eye offends you, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is profitable that for thee that one of thy members should perish, not that the whole body should be. What do you mean by that? How would you apply that?
Get yourself out of temptation's way.
That's what he does. Now, when I was your age, the temptations that you're facing came in the, not in the form of a device, what was on a device, but it was in an aisle in a store. So we knew the dirty magazines were down on a certain aisle, and you don't go down that aisle, and partly you didn't go down the aisle because people would see you go down that aisle, and then they would know what you're doing over there, and you'd be embarrassed. So there's that. That's not to say it still wasn't a temptation. But now it's something in private. And it can be even done where nobody knows. And you think nobody knows. But there is somebody that knows. And in this case, God does. Notice his view of God and notice his view of the sin. He doesn't think this is a little thing. He doesn't think, well, everybody does it. What about on that regard? Were there other people in his life, in his past, who have given in to this particular sin? Judah. Any?
Not Judah and Tamar.
Yes. Who else?
Reuben.
Yes. With his father, concubines. I mean, so what's Joseph's image of what other people do? That didn't guide him on what's right or wrong. So as long as you're thinking, well, other people, whatever they do, if that's your moral compass to determine right and wrong, that's going to affect how hard you fight, isn't it? But if you know this is wrong, and this isn't just some little thing, he says, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? There are some things I know you won't do because you believe that they are abominable. But then there's some things that sometimes we give in because we don't think they're that bad. So get your view of sin right and get your view of God right. And what if, are there not times in your life where you know you would not do some things if you were around some people? Like the example I gave about the magazine aisle. I wouldn't want to go down that aisle if somebody would see me. But what if I always knew that God was with me? What if I took God with me wherever I went? Are there not some people you would not say some things in their presence because you care of what they think, you respect them? Are there not some people you just have enough decency about yourself that you know there's no way I would do that in front of my mom or my grandma or somebody that I care about? But what about God? What if you had God in your thoughts at all times? You believed God was in your presence. So that when you look at a woman, that you know God knows what's in your mind. God knows what you're thinking. Might that help you to fight a temptation to look in a way that is not appropriate? A married man who has some decency about himself check out a woman right in front of his wife. Well, what if God knows who you're checking out at all times? So be careful about that. Have the Lord with you. Care about what he thinks about what's in your heart and in your mind. And then if you're pressed day after day, now, you can do what you got to do to try to get things out. I want to encourage you to do that. Whatever you got to do, do whatever it takes. Sometimes people aren't drastic enough. You may just have to get more drastic. If you're struggling with the sin of pornography, and you're trying to quit, and you're habitually still falling, you feel terrible, you ask God to forgive you, and then you're falling back into it. Struggling with that. You're not alone. There are other people who struggle with that, had a long, hard battle. But I also want you to know there are people who have beat that battle too. Okay. And if you need to talk to one of us about that, that's what we're here for. Try to help you. I'm ashamed to say, if there was one thing in my life that I could go back and one event where I wish I could undo, there was one guy who would flash a dirty magazine before. I kept doing that. And at first, my reaction was, get that out of my face. I don't want to see that. That's the way I responded at first. He kept doing this. He kept doing it day after day after day. Until eventually that one image stuck. And at that one particular time I said, let me see that again. And I so wish that I could go back and undo it. I can't undo that. I can ask the Lord to forgive me. And I can choose from here on out. That I'm just not going to look at those kinds of things. I will set no wicked thing before my eyes. I can make that kind of affirmation and determination. And if I fall, I can get back up. Okay? I may need to find somebody I can be accountable to help me with that if necessary. You can too. I want you to know you can do that. You can defeat this. Here's a young man who did it. And he got out of the house and he fled. Whatever you got to do, it might be that you've got to not keep your device in your room. You know that's where your temptation is late at night. I mean, how dumb can that be, taking that into your room and then you keep messing up? You know, maybe you just don't need to have that in your room at night, if that's the difficulty. Okay? Whatever you've got to do. It might even be getting rid of the device altogether. But do whatever is necessary, whatever you've got to do. Whatever it takes.
I think it's helpful to me to think through the emotional impact that Joseph is experiencing through all this. He could very well say, you know, I have suffered enough. I've worked hard to get where I am. I deserve this. I deserve a little comfort after my brothers have mistreated me so. This is just part of my work experience. I mean, I've worked hard in my master's house. This is coming to me. And I think we sometimes trick ourselves in the same sort of thinking about immorality is, you know, I deserve a little break, or I deserve a little comfort, or a little pleasure. I've worked hard to be holy all this time, and then that's just not the way Joseph approached it. And he saw it as still this great wickedness against God. All of the reasons you mentioned, that impressed me here about his story. He didn't allow his circumstances to convince him that sin was somehow deserved.
Excellent points. We don't ever earn the right at any point, even if we've been dealt a hard hand.
Right.
And the most important thing for us is to do the right thing, even when nobody else is looking, because God is doing this. Here's a young man who did that. He got out. You know what happened to him? He did the right thing. Then what happened? Yeah, now if anybody would have ever thought, wow, I'm you know, Father favors me, then this happens, and then I start doing good. I'm getting somewhere, and then I do the right thing, and now where does this land me? Do you think that would have ever been as tempting at that point to have said, why even do right? If doing right gets me here, that would have been short-sighted. So remember this, no matter where you are or where you end up in the future, no matter how difficult that is, if you're only thinking of the here and now and that difficulty, you may not know what God may be working out for something later. You may not have any clue how He's doing any of that. But what if you just knew whatever was being worked out was for your good? What if you just knew that? What if you knew you was a part of something bigger than yourself? What if you knew that God's providence may be at hand? How might that free you up to not get so discouraged when difficulties come? To know God still loves me. God's still with me. Look at that, verse 21. After he's thrown in prison, accused of rape, he's totally innocent. But verse 21 says, "But the Lord was with Joseph." There's that phrase again. And he showed him mercy, gave him favor inside the keeper of the prison. And it shows how he's promoted over all the other prisoners. You know, if you're a slave, be the best slave you can be. If you're a prisoner, be the best prisoner you can be. But let God be with you wherever you are, and let your presence bless others. And that's what Joseph is doing. Verse 23, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made him to prosper. Prosper in prison. But he prospered. He's doing as good as he can be in his circumstances. Wherever you are, wherever that might find yourself, at different places in your life, be with the Lord. Let the Lord be with you. Okay? Are you bearing fruit of that? Are you trustworthy? Are people trusting you with their stuff and putting you in positions because you are trustworthy? That's what's happening to Joseph. Do you remember where your blessings come from? Are you continuing to serve God regardless of your circumstances? Now, why he's in prison? I don't think this is the kind of prison where you had ping pong tables and TVs and smoke breaks. Go to Psalm 105. Comments on the heritage of God's people. This psalm. Notice what it says about Joseph briefly. Psalm 105, verse 18 and 19. Verse 17. He sent a man before them, even Joseph, who was sold for a servant, whose feet they hurt with fetters, and he was laid in irons. Some of your translations may say his neck was in irons. Until the time that his word came, the word of the Lord tried him. You reckon those words that he told about his dreams, you reckon they were trying him? You ever wonder if he ever doubted? You ever wonder if they might be tempted to say, you know, that was just some fluke? But yet he's being tried and tested. He was hurt. So this prison, I don't know how long he was in prison. I know he was, after the butler and baker are in the prison, there's another 2 years pass after that before the butler remembers, and then he gets elevated. But you know the story about the butler and the baker, right? They're put in prison. He cares about them. He notices they're sad one day. Isn't that interesting? Bad things are happening to you, but you still care about other people. You know, If you're going through a difficulty, do you just kind of, you know, wallow in your own self-pity, stay inside yourself, or do you look outside yourself for something bigger? He's caring about the countenance of the others. That was a good point there to think about. All right? He wants to interpret their dream, but he's not taking honor of it for himself. He says in chapter 40, verse 8, interpretations belong to God. So he's honoring God. And he tells them, okay, this butler has the dream of the vine with three branches, and then he squeezes the grapes that come from it into Pharaoh's cup. That means in 3 days he's going to be restored to his office. Then the baker has a dream of the three baskets on his head full of baked meats, and then there's the birds coming even out of the basket, which means in 3 days he's going to be hanged and the birds are both come true. But he had told the butler, when you get restored, remember me. And then in verse 15, I've done nothing that they should put me into this dungeon. So he's innocent. 2 years pass because the butler forgot him. Long time. That's a long time to be in his position. And yet the Lord's still with him. Later, the Pharaoh has two dreams. Both dreams mean the same thing. It's going to be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. The one dream about the seven lean cows eat up the seven fat cows, but they're still lean. Then you have seven thin ears that swallow up seven full ears of corn, both meaning the same thing. In chapter 41 and verse 12, by the butler remembers. 41 verse 6, 46, Joseph is 30 years old when he becomes governor of Egypt. Okay. But the butler referred to Joseph in verse 12 as a young man. So even 28 years old, he's still a young man. But Joseph tells the Pharaoh, it's not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And he tells him God has showed Pharaoh what he's about to do. It's interesting, in chapter 41, there's blessings along the way. Okay. He's promoted again, and then there's more blessings. He names Manasseh his son. It means forgetting, because God has helped me to forget all my toil. Hard to imagine all the difficulty he must have been facing. You ever wonder what that was like? All the times he was cheated out of, being with his family, being with his father, missing of the events. They grew up, they got older, and he missed it. Can't get those years back. Would that make you sour? Would that make you hold a grudge of some sort? Would that be difficult? Ephraim is named fruitful because God has made it fruitful in the land of affliction. It's a foreign land, foreign country, foreign culture. You know, all these difficulties. What would you have done? So then you go through 7 years of plenty. Have 2 years of famine. Now the brothers are hungry. They have to go to the only place that is left because of where Joseph is, because of what all he's been through. Now he's able to save his family. When he sees his family, what does he do? What's his reaction? Is he like, I'm in control? Comes around, goes around, buddies. That's not what he does. He weeps. Chapter 42, verse 44. He tests them a little bit. He sees the turmoil they're going through. They're feeling guilty. They said, God's found out our iniquity. They say things like this. God's, you know, paying us back. They say things to that regard. They're afraid because of certain things that are happening. Even Jacob said the words of chapter 42, verse 36, that everything is against me. Isn't that interesting how sometimes people think all the things that are happening bad in their life? In Jacob's case, he lost his son, okay? Thinks he's dead. But he thinks all this is against me. What he doesn't know is all of the things that are happening is for him. It just feels like it's against him from his perspective because he doesn't know all of what God is doing. And neither do you and I. We need to remember that. When Joseph, at the end, he's comforting them. He's giving them peace. He's telling them, fear not. After the test and after a couple of trips, he comforts his brothers. He feeds them. He nourishes them. He gives them change of clothes. He gives them the best of the land. He returns in good to those who did him evil. That's what a young man could do. And then, not only that, chapter 45, notice how he looks at it. He says, God sent me. So, when something bad happens to you, you ever wonder, is God doing something through you to bless other people? Chapter 45, verse 11, he says, I'll nourish you. And chapter 45, verse 15, he kissed all of them. He's not harboring any ill will, he's forgetting. What a beauty of forgiveness. And then would you have provided the wagons, the food, and the clothes that he does for them in chapter 45? Chapter 50, in verse 17, after the father is dead, what do the brothers think? They're thinking, oh, all of this kindness that he's shown us has only been short-lived until dad dies, and now he's going to do us in. That's not even the way Joseph thinks. He's crying because they're thinking this way, and he comforts them, and he says, fear not. Am I in the place of God? Do you think you're in the place of God? Let God do his work. He's going to do his work whether you like it. You're on board with his will or not. He's going to do his will. So, you're not in the place of God. Don't try to step in his shoes. But then he says this famous statement in chapter 50 and verse 20, "As for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good." And then he comforted them. He assured them, "I'm not going to hurt you. Yeah, I know what you did was wrong." But he's able to look at the bright side of things. If this had not happened to me, I would not be where I am at to now be able to save us. But here's another one. Can't help but wonder, do you think Joseph knew the magnitude, even beyond what he's saying here, how that him going into Egypt and all the difficulties he faced then made the people so many years later be the great nation that it was, and then bring in the Son of God? Do you think he understood all that? And yet he still got a great attitude here about God meant it for good. So do you know why all the bad things that happen to you happen? I can't take that class, because that's just not my... I don't think that's something we're going to be able to figure out completely. What I do know in this story is God loves me, and he loves you. God's going to do his part. What my duty is to trust in the Lord and do the right thing before God, regardless of what happens to me. I think if we'll do this, we'll find strength in the temptations, difficulties, no matter what happens. That can help you as young and even on into older age, if the Lord wills that you remain long enough to see that. Any thoughts? All right. Dear Joseph.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andy.